When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. Have you ever used it before, producer Naya?
I have, but I was one of the quality professionals that you mentioned looking for the perfect role. And guess what? I found one.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. What job was it?
It was this very job, and I got it by using LinkedIn Jobs. So if it wasn't for the platform, I wouldn't be sat here speaking with you, Giles. Now imagine that.
Oh, wow, that is truly amazing. Well, we've got a lot to thank them for. And it proves that LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place.
And on LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn.
Post your job for free at linkedin.com/purple. That's linkedin.com/purple to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Something Rhymes with Purple, our English language podcast. I'm Giles Brandreth, and with me is my friend
Susie Dent.
And we're here today talking about words, language, because that's what the podcast is all about. The joy of language, the power of language. And we're going to talk today about bad language. So if you are of a sensitive disposition and feel that you hear enough of the F word on the number 49 bus, which I certainly do, now is the time to go back and see if you can find last week's podcast or next week's podcast, but not this one, because we are going to be using a little bit of bad language as we go along.
And so, talking about whether, in fact, it is so bad.
Yeah, exactly, because a word is just a word. It's just a sound, isn't it?
But they're charged.
They are charged. The authority we have to do this is nil in my case. I'm just a word enthusiast. I love language. I know a bit about language because over the years I've written books about it. I'm the founder of the National Scrabble Championships. Susie is a proper trained... Are you a philologist? Are you a lexicographer? What are you?
On Countdown, the show that I appear on in Britain, I am known as a lexicographer. But do you know what? When people say, can you give us your job description? I never know how to reply. I just like to say that I am a logophile. I love words and I've grown up with words and I have... been trained myself. So studied some more.
Now we're going to talk about bad language today. Mm. So if bad language doesn't appeal to you, fuck off. This is not going to be your show, but it's going to be ours. I think I was still a schoolboy. In fact, I know I was when I was on the 13th of November, 1961, when I first heard the word fuck spoken in public. I was watching television. And there was a famous British theatre critic called Kenneth Tynan. And he became the first person to say, fuck, on British television. I heard it as it happened. My parents were embarrassed. And actually, the nation was scandalised. And the BBC apologised. It was on a late-night chat programme. And he was talking. It was curious that he was the first person to say it, because he had a stammer. So it might, you know, he could have got nervous at the last moment and begun saying, but he didn't. He got it out cleanly and clearly. And he was somebody who was a noted theatre critic. He campaigned against theatre censorship. He was famous because he put on a show in the West End called O Calcutta, based on a French phrase, O Calcutta, you know, oh, what an ass you've got, to use the American expression, which was scandalous. Because it involved nudity, simulated sex on stage. The great choreographer Robert Helpman went to see it, didn't approve. It came out immediately afterwards, having seen all this naked frolicking, and said the trouble with naked dancing is that not everything stops when the music stops. So that was Ken Tynan, and it caused a big furore. So he is credited with being the first person officially to say fuck on television, though the wonderful actress, who's a friend of mine, Miriam Margolis, she did pop up to say that it was actually she who had said it on the television first, as a frustrated aside when she was appearing on University Challenge in 1965. But having done some research into this, it turns out that it was the Irish playwright Brendan Behan, who was probably the first person to utter the ancient Anglo-Saxon expletive on the box when he appeared live on Panorama in 1956. But it wasn't properly noticed at the time because he was so drunk he was slurring most of what he had to say. I mention it being Anglo-Saxon. What is the origin of the word fuck? What did it originally mean? What does it mean now? Susie Dent.
Well, the first thing I'm going to do is correct you. It's not Anglo-Saxon.
Oh.
So we have a
why is it known as a famous Anglo-Saxon? It is, isn't it?
We tend to think of all our swear words as being Anglo-Saxon. In fact, the only real Anglo-Saxon swear word probably is shit. And bollocks were around as well in Anglo-Saxon times, but not rude at all. In fact, neither of them were considered to be particularly rude. Improper, maybe, for shit. But those are the only two. Fuck came about quite a lot later. Around the sort of 1300s, 1400s, you'll find the first records emerging. Now, I'm going to start with all the lovely stories attached to fuck, because one thing that we love to do, what English speakers love to do, is to invent stories, particularly invent acronyms for particular words. So shit, for example, I mentioned that. The backronym, as they're known, so the kind of, you know, the acronym that's made up to explain the
an acronym is where you take the initial letters.
Yes, and they form a word. So it's not an abbreviation. So it is something you can actually say as a word.
Yam. Being an acronym for yet another meeting.
Yes, oh, that kind of thing. Exactly.
Very good. YOLO, so, you only live once. That's an acronym.
That's an acronym.
Good.
Yes. So shit, the backronym that has been invented to explain that one, so the back acronym, the backstory, is ship high in transit, something to do with storing combustible cow dung high in ships for fear of explosion. That's shit. That's the one that people made up for that.
Do it again.
S-H-I-T, ship high in transit.
Ship high in transit.
Yes, not true. Not true at all. In fact, it goes back to an old English word, shite, which meant exactly as it does what it does today.
Like posh is not port out starboard home.
It's not.
The origin of posh. What is that, incidentally?
Posh, it probably goes back to an old Romany word, not an acronym at all, meaning sort of money. So it's a kind of spivvy type word.
Posh.
Posh.
Okay. So back to shit. Back to the shit.
Back to shit. Oh, actually, we've done shit, so now on to fuck. I love those kind of sentences. So the backronym created for fuck is rather wonderful. People think that it might be fornication under consent of the king. And the story goes that in times of plague, when the population had been decimated, the king positively encouraged to go forth and procreate. And it said that couples would hang signs outside their doors saying F-U-C-K, that they were fornicating under consent of the king. And in no circumstances were they to be disturbed. Not true.
I love it.
What a great story.
I love it. Can I chip in with a story now?
Yes.
Only because you saying bollocks has reminded me of it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember there was a pope called Pope Joan? A
no.
Female pope?
I don't. I should.
Are you not interested in the history of the popes?
I will be now.
You will be now. There have been popes since the time of St. Peter, as it were, the original pope. And in the early years of the papacy, there were lots of doubtful popes. And there was a girl who managed to become pope. And she was called Pope Joan. It caused a big, big scandal. And they didn't want any more female popes getting in on the act. So there is to this day a special chair in the Vatican, which I have seen. You will recall when the Pope has been chosen, when the smoke has gone up and the Pope has been crowned, he is carried through St. Peter's Square on a chair.
Yes.
By people underneath him.
Yes.
Who are carrying him through St. Peter's Square. Well, the chair has no bottom to it.
Right.
So he is perched on a chair, which is really rather like a loo seat.
Okay. Oh, uncomfortable.
Yeah, it is uncomfortable.
I'm just wondering where this is going. It's going to be a swear word coming up soon.
And the point is that to make sure that he was not female, the cardinals, he would be seated up on this chair and with no underclothes. No underpinnings.
Oh.
People used to wear underclothes, in fact, in those days. So he had no, you know, like Scots people are supposed to be underneath their kilts.
Not always, although the history of underwear is quite... Tutankhamun was buried with 140 spare pairs of underpants. Anyway, that's another story.
Well, it's interesting. Yep. It's interesting, but let me finish my story
yes.
about the Pope. So the Pope sits in this. He's just been elected. He sits in this chair that is like a loo seat, but you can't... Obviously, he's got his papal regalia on.
Yes.
And the cardinals walk underneath because the chair is being held up. And as they walk underneath, they gaze up at mm-hmm. the Pope's bollocks.
Yeah.
And because, of course, they're cardinals, they speak in Latin. And as they go under the papal chair, they say, testiculos habet et bene pendentes. Which translated means testicles he has and they hang
hanging
well.
Nicely. Okay.
Yes, exactly. So that's my bollock story. Back to where you were with fuck.
Back to fuck. Okay, so nothing to do with fornicating under consent of the king. And actually, the real origin is much more sinister because we think it goes back to, with sound changes and letter changes, the Latin pugnare, meaning to hit. And the early records of fucking were all about hitting, particularly hitting women, rather than intercourse. So, as I say, not particularly nice origin. But I have to say, as far as swear words go, not only is it incredibly enduring. I mean, it's still, okay, may not have the shock value today that it did once upon a time, certainly not in Kenneth Tynan's day. But, you know, as a taboo, it's remained really strong. And you think of all the other words that have fallen out of use. Fuck has kept going.
What
but
is
it's so versatile, Giles. Well, you know, adjective, intensifier, fucking unbelievable. You can have abso-fucking-lutely. You can just use it in so many different ways. And actually, that's why linguists love it.
Separate it then, please, for a moment, from, as it were, the sexual act.
Yes.
In, for example, a book that I read when I was at prep school, when I was sort of 10 or 11,
yes,
would have been 1960, the year D.H. Lawrence's famous novel Lady Chatterley's Lover was first published in Britain. There was a big court case, and as a result, it was able to be published. Previously, it had been published, I think, in France in English, and possibly in America. I read Lady Chatterley's Lover, and there the word fuck is used not as an expletive, not as an aggressive term, but as an informal, intimate term for sexual intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's meant in affection, you know, shall we fuck, can we fuck? So there's that usage. Oh, forgive me now. Forgive me.
Excitement. Hitting the microphone, yes.
Well, can I tell you, it was pretty exciting when I was 11 or 12 to read Lady Chatterley's Lover. Have you read it?
I think I did, yeah, but a little bit older than that. Yeah. I went to a convent, remember that.
Oh, did you?
Mm.
We'll get on to that.
Okay.
So that's one use of the word,
yeah,
fuck. Put that to one side. The way I hear fuck being used on the bus is in the expletive sense of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you say it is versatile, and is it useful? Or is it lazy?
Incredibly useful. Well, it's lazy if you rely on it. Like, I think some comedians, in my experience, occasionally rely on it too much for a laugh, because it always gets a laugh. It's that kind of nervous giggle that you get, you know, if they just say fuck off or use the C word or whatever, which you can now surprisingly do on British TV. But yeah, it's got amazing power maybe we can talk about, you know, how in terms of science now, how swearing is being viewed, because there's so much research going into it, not just in sort of linguistic ways, but physiological ways as well. But I want to go back to that idea of hitting, because you will find that retained in some English surnames. So go back centuries and you will find a kestrel called a windfucker, completely neutrally, because it beat the air, the wind, with its wings. It hit the air with its wings. So it was a windfucker. Likewise, you will find a Mr. Fuckbeggar, who was alive and quite literally kicking, probably in the 13th century. So he clearly wasn't very nice to his, you know, his sort of inferiors, as he would view them, or people of lesser status than himself. So it was used in a
hitting
very sort of
striking.
Neutral way. Yeah,
but
hitting and striking.
But not in necessarily an aggressive way, it just meant hitting or striking.
Well, it did in the bird sense. I think Mr. Fuckbeggar probably wasn't very nice. yes, it has amazing power and amazing versatility. And it's interesting because I find myself swearing more now as I get older than
no,
I did before.
It's
are you the
opposite? Can I say it's the company you're keeping?
No, maybe it's the 8 out of 10 cats.
It is 8 out of 10 cats. You're with these lewd people who are not as young as they were when they began doing this and should know better now.
But I'm using it with myself. So I will, if I hit my head, and again, we can talk about stress relief, and there is a word for it, stress relief, swearing as a form of stress relief. But it, I find it incredibly therapeutic and cathartic. But I'm not really doing it to anybody else. I'm doing it for my own benefit.
Oh, Susie, time for me to go to the loo, or is that the lavatory? Is it the John? Is it the pissoir? I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to take a break now. We can play you an ad.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. but we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
You may have heard of the podcast Juicy Scoop. Wondered what it is? Why aren't you listening? Well, I'm its host. Created it, been doing it for 7 years. I'm Heather McDonald of Juicy Scoop with Heather McDonald. Now, I could tell you why you should be listening to my show, but my listeners wanted to write the ad for me, and here are some of the things they said. Not your regular Juicy podcast. Catch up on all the juicy topics from Hollywood and pop culture to true crime and beyond. Heather McDonald's Juicy Scoop always has great guests, great laughs, and great gossip. It's a comedian's take on the hottest headlines. Juicy Scoop is the pop culture news you want to hear. No BS, no filter, no filler. Raw, real, and in the moment. Throw in the hilarity of amazing comedians that you will instantly be obsessed with, a juicy crime story, and a dash of normal life in LA moments, and you've got yourself an amazing week of Juicy Scoop. Two episodes every week, every Tuesday and Thursday. It will never let you down.
I swear very, very rarely.
I don't think I've ever heard you.
Because of the way I was brought up.
Right.
I never heard either of my parents swear at all. I mean, my mother, she wouldn't have dreamt of it, wouldn't have occurred to her, I don't think. She was the daughter of a missionary.
Right.
And it just wouldn't, it just would never have occurred to her. My father, he was in the army, you know, during the Second World War for 6 years. He was a lawyer, he went to boarding school, etc. I never heard him say bloody.
Really? But he would have heard all the stuff like swearing like a trooper.
He was totally familiar with it all. It just
but didn't
would
use it.
Never.
Maybe
would never
he would
have
use it with his mates.
Maybe. I doubt it.
Okay.
I just can't conceive of him using it. So I've never been in the habit of doing it. So I don't swear, and I have to say I do find it a bit oppressive on the bus. It's funny enough, it's on the bus, not on the underground. People are quiet on the underground, but they make a noise on the bus.
Yeah.
And on the bus, particularly if I'm on the bus at times when people are going to school or coming back from school, I do hear people saying fuck quite a lot or fucking. And I don't like it because it's lazy. But I'm also being rather self-conscious for people around me.
I know. I have double standards, you see, because I don't like to hear swearing in front of my youngest at all, and I feel like becoming my mother and saying, do you mind?
Yes. How old is your youngest, by the way?
She's 11 now.
Oh. So she must have heard these words.
She's fascinated by them. She's absolutely fascinated by the whole subject of swearing. But kids are so funny, aren't they? I have a friend whose daughter came back from school and said, Mum, I heard the C word at school today, age 8. And my friend was really quite perturbed about this, age 8, hearing the C word, which, of course, is the biggest of all. But she said, OK, well, just you better tell me what it is. And her daughter said, it was carp. And it turns out she hadn't even heard the word. It was crap that she thought was the C word, but she kind of somehow transposed it to carp and it all got lost, which I just love. But yeah, kids are quite funny when it comes to swearing. But I do, there's that kind of, as I say, the giggling element as well.
What's the word? The reminder there that it's just letters.
Yeah.
And we are giving them, we are imposing on them these meanings. Because you mentioned the wind fucker.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, well, maybe the bird was really called the wind sucker.
No.
Because I recall that we had a very old edition of Shakespeare when I was a boy at home. And the S's in the printed version looked like F's.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That used to be a type of script, did it?
It did, yeah. Well, it was, yes, it was just the I think, script primarily from the Middle Ages. You'll still find it in the manuscript.
So but I loved it in Where the Bee Sucks, There Suck I, when I was, again, 11 or 12, reading Lady Chatterley's Lover. Where the bee fucks, there fuck I. I thought, hey, look at this. We've got a dirty book here written by Shakespeare. So it is curious. We are the people imposing
it. Yes, it's funny. Again, taboos are quite interesting because in the Middle Ages, the biggest taboos were words that were considered to be blasphemy. So it was all about religious oaths. And so we evolved a huge number of euphemisms, really. We produced a whole lot of euphemisms to, you know, cover the fact that we were talking about Jesus Christ, which became Jeepers Creepers, which became Jiminy Cricket. We had Gore Blind Me for God Blind Me. We had some really convoluted ones like Gad's Budlikins, meaning God's body, or Zounds for God's wounds, and that kind of thing. In the early days, the very, very early days, it was a kind of mix between body parts being considered improper, but also being used completely clinically and normally in surgery manuals. So you will find the C word freely used in anatomy manuals in sort of 13th century, for example, which is quite interesting. Likewise, bollocks were used simply for the testicles. And they were really, they just said it as it was. So one of my favourite expressions for a part of the body, which you will find going back, and it was even used in the Bible, for intestines, they were called arse ropes.
Arse ropes.
Perfect, because it just is so transparent, isn't it? Arse ropes are your intestines. Anyway, I love that. So they were fairly matter of fact. Then came the sort of religious profanity. And it's really sort of in the kind of the latter part of the last millennium, I suppose, that things really took a turn toward body parts being the big taboos and the fuck being a big part of that.
Body parts and bodily functions.
Body act, yes.
And so up until what time are we talking? 1500, 1600?
Yes, I mean...
So it would simply be an anatomical description. Bollocks were testicles. When did bollocks come to mean rubbish or...
Well, it's interesting. It's had a really interesting life, bollocks, because, yes, you'll say that's a load of bollocks and you'll find that probably only from the sort of 1800s, 1900s. You know, onwards. But nowadays, we might say that's top bollocks, meaning that's really good.
Indeed. So it's flipped. That's dog's bollocks.
Dog's bollocks.
The top item on the Korean menu.
Do you know dog's bollocks? You know where that comes from? That's a lovely story.
It's a printer's term, is it?
It's a printer's term for the colon dash. So the punctuation that is the colon and then a dash, because it looks like a dog's testicles, they were known as the dog's bollocks. But because the dog's bollocks sounded like the cat's whiskers,
so if you wanted
the kipper's knickers.
So we're not rushing people. If you're correcting proofs or something and you say, I don't want just a colon here, I want a colon and then a dash before somebody speaks, you would indicate, you'd write dog's bollocks.
No, it wasn't really an instruction. It was just slang amongst printers. They'd say, you need a dog's bollocks in there. But because the formula sounded like the cat's whiskers, and there were a whole load of formulae like cat's whiskers, as I say, kipper's knickers.
Well, forgive me, you can't say cat's whiskers and not explain what the origin is.
Oh, cat's whiskers actually does. It's not a fanciful phrase because we think it goes back to the early wires that came off transistor radios that would kind of vibrate. So and they look like cat's whiskers. So I think that's where that comes from. But most of them just sounded good.
But dog's bollocks being... the best.
It just sounded like those, so it became the acme of excellence. Yes, that's how it worked.
You must just tell me the origin of wanker.
That's a good one, actually, because I think I'm going to look this up.
This I must explain to listeners. The reason that I'm not bringing my computer in and that we're relying entirely on Susie's when looking up these words is I do not wish to be arrested at a later date for spending time putting in words like wanker into the computer.
Well, okay, origin unknown, sadly, in the OED, which is what I figured, but what's quite interesting, obviously, wanker, originally somebody who masturbates, and there's something here, apologies to everyone listening if this offends you, but it's called wanker's doom, disability caused by excessive masturbation.
No, but
wanker's doom.
They're all doing it now. Have you seen The Favourite?
What?
Favourite, the film with Olivia Colman and all of those people. Oh, it's a wanker's paradise.
Thing?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. Have no fear.
But it became an objectionable, contemptible person in 1972, according to the OED. Get out, you fucker, screamed a youth. Another said, you wanker, and indulge in a masturbatory gesture.
What is interesting there about that is that when I was a boy, the idea of masturbation was completely taboo, and people would tell you that you would go blind if you indulged in it. Whereas now, it's totally acceptable. Mainstream films are featuring it. But while masturbation has become acceptable, so wanking is now acceptable, as a word, you wanker, now means the reverse of acceptable.
It's not a nice term, although you will find all of these words similar to fucker as well. You will find them being used semi-affectionately. So if you've got, you know, a couple of friends just saying, oh, you wanker, like that. It all depends on the tone, doesn't it?
So what are your rules about these words? Are they just collections of letters? Are they acceptable to you? What is your feeling about bad language?
Do I have rules? Well, as I say, I think I have double standards because I remember when my eldest daughter, when she was a teenager, just becoming a teenager, you started to use frigging as a euphemism for fucking. I didn't like that at all. And I don't think she's ever really sworn at me. But you know, again, it all depends on how you're using it. I think if it's used aggressively, then actually it does still hold power and the power to offend. I think you need to go very, very carefully. But I did talk earlier and promised to return to this research that shows how swearing can actually release all sorts of emotions that you really don't want pent up. And I don't know if you saw it. I think it's on YouTube and other channels where there was an experiment done involving Brian Blessed and Stephen Fry. And Stephen Fry was a spectator in this one, but Brian Blessed, who is, for those who don't know him, who is a very larger than, a real larger than life
character.
It's
a big, booming actor with a big, booming voice and a huge beard.
A huge beard, stentorian voice, absolutely. And he put his hand in a big tank of ice cold water. And he was allowed to use one swear word only. This is funny because the whole time is sort of punctuated by him saying, can't I use fuck as well as bollocks? But bollocks was what he chose. So he just said, bollocks, 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 all the way through to see whether swearing could actually enable him to hold his hand in the tank longer than the previous experiment, which had him doing the same thing, holding his hand in, but without swearing and without saying anything. And results have shown time and time again that actually if you swear very loudly, let it all out while you are enduring pain, you can endure that pain for a lot longer. I mean, I think it's as much as sort of 90 seconds or something extraordinary. And there, so stress relief, and there's something very, very cathartic.
And do you think it needs to be a swear word or could it be an invented word?
Well, it's something that has power for you. But I think swearing holds particular power for most people. And let's face it, if we stub our toe, it does help to jump around swearing, don't you think?
I don't know. I don't think I do it. Or do I do it?
Oh, gosh, I do.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. Big time. As I say, I do it more and more. And it is in my own company that I tend to do it because I think my convent education stays with me still. But you just shouldn't do any of this stuff.
So our rules are we should be sensitive.
Always sensitive.
And we should not use swear words for reasons of laziness.
Don't just use them as fillers. Use them for impact. Enjoy their versatility. Certainly use them for stress relief because there's a proven link for that. And, maybe lighten up a little bit. And, but I think it's always a balance, isn't it? It's always a tricky path.
Oh, before we go, we've got to have your triple whammy. Every time we meet, you come up with three words that might be old, might be new, a bit surprising, a bit unusual, but genuine words that do exist, that have heritage and hope. What are the three you've got for us this week?
I've tried to choose words that have something to do with swearing. So the first one is exactly what I've just talked about. It is the relief of tension in your body through a good swear. And the word for that, if you want to justify turning the air blue when you've stubbed your toe, is lalochezia. So that is L-A-L-O-C-H-E-Z-I-A.
Goodness. Lalochezia. And what's the origin of that?
That is Greek. Most medical conditions are nicknamed
and
after
it means
Greek.
Relief through.
Really through.
So you jump in the bath. Eureka is actually an example of that. When what's his name jumped into the bath and it was too hot. And he cried, Eureka? Who was that?
That was Archimedes.
Archimedes.
But that was about, that was a sort of discovery, wasn't it? I think it was less lalochezia and more, wow.
Oh,
what the guy just discovered.
Yes.
The next word is, I mentioned earlier the versatility of fuck, for example, but many swear words, and you might say that something is abso-blooming-marvellous or abso-fucking-lutely, and that splitting of words, and so putting one in the middle, sandwich words, if you like, is called timesis. That is the process. Timesis.
Timesis?
Timesis. So T-M-E-S-I-S. Bit weird on the page.
Oh, T-M.
Timesis. Again, Greek.
T-M. As in tonolomy, as it were. T-M.
T-M-E-S-I-S.
E-S-I-S. Timesis.
Timesis.
So, that's where you put fuck in the middle.
It's usually a swear word, actually, but it's from the Greek for splitting. So you're cutting a word up and putting another one in the middle. And my final one is just a word. Well, actually, there's two words here, two C words, but not the ones you might expect for when you're feeling a bit grumpy and irritable and therefore probably prone to swearing. And you are feeling crumpsy and carnaptious.
Crumpsy?
Two words from the historical lexicon. So
I.e. crumpsy at the end of it?
No, a Y.
C-R-U-M-P-S-Y?
Yeah, and carnaptious.
And what do they mean?
Just grumpy, irritable, and basically a bit hatchet-faced.
Do you know, I have to guard against that.
Oh, do you?
As one gets...
I don't see you being irritable.
I know, you don't, because I do it all at home.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. My wife says, what the fuck are you up to now?
I say, I'm, do all the swearing.
I'm being crumpsy. And can I, no, I do. Now, look, I tell you what, you give me every time we meet one of your lovely new words to use, lalokesia, timesis, crumpsy and carnaptious. But that's four words, isn't it?
Well, yes, I do. You can take your pick between carnaptious and crumpsy. I couldn't choose.
I've got a surprise for you this week.
Okay.
I was given, last Christmas, the Shakespeare Insult Generator.
Oh, excellent.
And I think this is more fun than using these predictable old words with which we are so familiar. Mm. These are genuine words from Shakespeare.
Fustilarian, catastrophe,
exactly.
That kind of thing.
You apish, ball-pated abomination. You that's too difficult, that one. You cuckoldy, muddle-metalled codpiece. You, I'm just turning the pages. You heinous, snook-shotten horseback breaker. They're rather fun, aren't they?
Oh, it's actually, you fustilarian something-something, I'll tickle your catastrophe, which I love.
Yeah.
Mind boggles.
Nook-shotten means full of nooks and angles, confusing and deceptive. The point is, one should be more imaginative.
I agree.
So get yourself a Shakespeare insult generator, you greasy, senseless, obstinate jackanapes. I'm loving this. Oh, yes, you puking, sodden-witted measles. This is effective, isn't it?
It is effective. But, you know, I reckon if you put a few swear words in, it would have had even more impact.
OK.
I'll go away now.
Yeah, we'll both fuck off. do please do what you can to rate it and review us wherever you're listening, because it'll help bring other listeners to the party. And to make sure you get all the future episodes, just subscribe, and then it will all happen. And I do assure you, there won't be this windfucker business every week. We just got a bit carried away today. Something Rhymes with Purple is a Something Else production. It was produced by Paul Smith, with additional production from Russell Finch, Steve Ackerman and Josh Gibbs. They didn't do much, but we're including them here just to make them feel a bit warmer.